Welcome back to the Talking Stocks podcast. Joe and Todd with you here as always. We've got a good show for you today. We're going to talk about, we've got a huge smattering of stocks for you. We're going to talk about some common mistakes and common ways that people make their accounts implode, which should be a fun conversation. But first, let's kind of pick up where we've left off a couple times over the past couple weeks with GameStop, because we got to see a Reddit user testify before Congress this week, which was very fun. So Todd, why don't you give us a little rundown, and we can discuss kind of our takeaways from that.
Joe, I think the single best quote from the entire congressional hearing yesterday had it been when the person from Reddit said, "I am not a cat."
I am not a cat. I was gonna pick my favorite quote as "I like the stock," because he actually said it, and I thought that was amazing.
You know, it was kind of funny because, you know, the whole question was, I think one of the underlying questions was, should you be able to talk your own book on these social media sites, right? Should you be able to talk up stocks that you have positions in without, you know, and theoretically drive your own return? And I thought it was kind of funny that instead of doing it on Reddit, we gave him the platform to do it on national TV.
Yep, we got DFV to say on the record before Congress that he would buy GameStop at $45 a share.
Yeah. I mean, it was a really interesting conversation. I don't know how many people stayed for the whole show. I did a kind of a tweet storm because I was watching for a couple hours of just different thoughts and things that popped into my head as we were going through it. You know, I think that I'm not to beat a dead horse, because we've talked about in the show before the saga and what happened with GameStop and how, you know, you've got winners. I mean, obviously this person who is testifying, Deep Blank and Value, Roaring Kitty, however you want to refer to him, he made a lot of money. And even though he's given some back, it sounds like he's still in the stock and, yes, and still up big, because it sounds like his cost basis is probably 15 or less. I don't know. I don't think he specified, but it sounds like he's definitely up on the trade. But we do know just from screenshots from things that have been posted on Reddit, you know, lost porn. we've seen people who've gotten imploded, right? From the stock going from, I think, peaked intraday around 460.
Yep.
And I think as of trading today, let me just pull up a real-time quote.
Yeah, it wasn't
11 o'clock on Friday. It's trading about $43. So, I mean, it's certainly possible that a lot of people who heard about it on TV or on radio or in media or whatever, and as the snowball is rolling down the hill, jumped onto Robinhood, opened up accounts, got pretty much instant access to their cash, and instant access if they paid the $5 a month for gold to get margin, and then went out and bought it at a number that's way higher than $40. Way higher than $40.
Yeah, we'll get into some of the background behind that loss porn, as it is so called on Wall Street Bets. Believe me, those are not our terms. We would never put forth such vulgarity on this channel. No, absolutely not. So, when we had our GameStonks episode a couple of weeks ago, we talked about like what the potential fallout would be from that. And so not to repeat ourselves, but I think there are several potential changes that might come of this. Now, whether or not things actually change, totally up for debate. But what are some things, Todd, that you could see happening as a result of all of this?
I know, you're such a cynic, Joe. We were talking prior to the show, and you're like, the government's owned by the corporation, so what will really change, right? And I suppose there's some truth to that. I don't know. I think that there are some opportunities, right? I mean, I tweeted about this. If you don't follow me on Twitter, my handle is at EB Capital, listeners. I tweeted about this the other day, just trying to brainstorm some of the things that maybe could come out. and you know, maybe would be the good things that could come from the hearings and this whole event that has happened. I think one of them, and we're already seeing it, Joe, is just a greater awareness of investing and the potential associated with investing, you know, both good and bad. And of course, that people being aware of it, that could create a whole new generation of people who are interested in the markets and are benefiting from the markets. I call that kind of a less friction, right? So less friction, increasing access to the markets for everybody. I mean, I've got a teenage son and his friends are asking me, hey, tell me about how do I open up an account or how should I do it? And, you know, I've answered more questions about Roth IRA for kids in the past 2 weeks than I have probably in the past 8 months, you know? And so I think that's one thing, just greater, you know, awareness.
Yeah, we definitely saw the cusp of that back when all these platforms went to no fee trades on just general US equities. So yeah, I hope that this is just kind of part of the process of like the democratization of investing. I know that I've certainly reaped the benefits of those free trades. No, I don't trade on margin, listeners. I don't trade options. I don't have a Robinhood account. Well, actually I do, but it doesn't have any money in it. but yeah, I think that this may be another kind of turning point in the world of retail investing. And I do think it's for the better.
I agree. And you actually segued into one of the other things that I had posted, which is, you know, I think coming out of this, we'll probably have a greater understanding of why those commissions are zero. You know, I think a lot of people just took it on face value and said, oh, free trading. When in reality, it's a lot like, you know, Facebook. You have free access to this platform, but guess what? You are the product that's being monetized. So in the case of Robinhood, and all of these other brokers that offer $0 trading, they're able to offer $0 trading because they're getting paid to direct the order flow to these, you know, in between middlemen who are then able to capture the spread between the bid price and the offer price. And again, the bid price being what you would sell to and the offer price being what you would buy at. And in the middle there, there's a couple cents, or maybe the argument from Citadel yesterday was that it used to be many cents. And because of technology and because of these payments for order flow and everything else, the cost of commissions has shrunk. And now they're able to trade in sub 1 penny increments. And you certainly do have seen this. I don't know if you see, I think that you also have Fidelity as your brokerage.
I do, yep.
Yeah. Well, I did a couple trades yesterday. And sure enough, I logged in just to look at my order execution. And they actually have a line that says price improvement. So, you know, price improvement being, okay, we took a look at what the bid and offer was. They do it kind of, they're looking at the lowest bid and the highest offer and then seeing where they came in. But the whole concept again being that you're not going to get the worst execution you possibly could get.
Yeah, which is what you get on Robinhood, by the way. I can attest to that back when I did use my Robinhood account before Fidelity and all these others went to free trades. So just to kind of put it into perspective,
did you find sometimes that you were getting over or at the high end of the offer?
Oh yeah. Like you would see to just put this into a concrete example, like if I went out to buy XYZ stock at, say it was 32.50 and the range was 32.48 to 32.56, it would execute at like 32.58. And you're like, how the heck is that possible? And then, yeah, it turns out that would be like its daily high or something like that, knowing my luck. And it was just a really unfortunate experience that was never very well explained. I mean, Robinhood obviously had a vested interest in not explaining why they did that. And for the most part, 18-year-olds or 20-year-olds or 25-year-olds don't really care, but they should.
I don't have a Robinhood account, Joe. Do they show the bid and offer? Or do they just do, show you the price?
Yeah. Okay.
So they would show you a bid and offer and then sometimes you would execute it above. And I think though a lot of people don't really realize if you're buying in non-round lots, lot being 100 shares. So let's say that you end up buying 3 shares or 8 shares or whatever, they've got to actually work harder to get that to match those, the buyer up to the seller on those.
Yeah.
So that tends to end up pushing you above the offer price sometimes. But again, it shouldn't have to in this day and age. I mean, you've got companies like Fidelity, they're matching trades internally, right? So you'll think about how many customers they have. Someone is probably trying to sell something that you're looking to buy at the same time, just internally. They don't even have to go outside to an external all the time. And I think that according to them, I want to say it's dozens. I wanted to say 70, but I can't remember exactly. It's a huge number of different trading venues, theoretically, that they can get the execution. And I think that that's something that we're going to learn a lot more about. We're going to see, maybe that's another one of the potential benefits, is that now we will actually know more about, think more about price improvement, rather than just saying, okay, well, the commission that I would have spent of $5 has now been replaced by me paying worse execution, which oftentimes is more than $5, right? So I think that that's something, just that maybe greater disclosure and understanding how the brokers are making their money off of your buying and your selling could be a plus. And hey, credit where credit's due. I mean, the people who are listening to the testimony and everything, there were some people from Congress that didn't really fully understand a lot of the stuff that's going on. There were some smart cookies on there who obviously had a really good understanding of it, and they were driving at this, Joe. They were driving at this point. Part of the problem, though, is that, you know, each one of these people are limited to like 5 minutes or something. So you would just get into the meat of it. Like, they would set it up, the question, and then be like, time's up. Can't answer the question. But there were people who were actually trying to get to the bottom of that. I think there was one, I can't remember which congressperson it was, but there was one that was saying exactly what you were pointing at. Will I get the same execution or worse execution? I think it was Griffith from Citadel was kind of on the hot seat here. He was squirming a little bit, in my opinion, didn't want to answer this question. But it was,
yeah, with his five lawyers just out of view of the camera, right?
Right. And it was, the whole idea was enhanced price versus best price or something crazy like that. And it was, who's getting the best execution? Can you pay to get a better execution than somebody else? All things equal, can that happen? I don't think we really got a real answer on that. And so again, I think one of the things that would be bullish or positive coming out of this testimony would be that. I think another thing, and you and I talked about before the show, is maybe we finally get rid of T+2.
Yeah, maybe, because I know personally I've had some issues with that before, where I go into my portfolio and I try to buy a couple shares of something and it says that I have, you know, $500 available, and I trade two $100 shares. I try to buy a couple of shares that are $100 each, so $200, and it's like, you don't have enough cash available. And I don't remember when I sold the last stock that's contributing to my cash position. So yeah, it gets a little bit annoying, right, and I've never been given an answer as to like why that is.
Yeah, it's just because of the arcane systems that still exist, which it's so hard for us to wrap our minds around in this day and age of technology, the fact that this stuff can't be immediate settlement.
Right, especially with a giant brokerage like Fidelity or Schwab, or let's face it, any of the brokerages that any of our viewers or listeners are using. They're large enough, they have enough clout, they have enough free cash to be able to settle just about any position instantly.
Well, and you know, it stretches further than that. Again, it's all these arcane systems. It's like you're trying to build something on top of some software that was written in the 1980s, right? So it's clunky and it's horrible, and you've still got paper. I was just reading about this thing that happened in the 60s, where the 60s were roaring and all sorts of people were making money in stocks. And of course, it was all paper then, right? So people were inundating brokerage houses with paper transactions, paper applications, paper this, that, paper that. And the systems just couldn't handle it. And all sorts of errors were made. All sorts of brokerages failed. All sorts of stuff happening. I feel like, you know, even today we're still struggling with this mishmash of, you know, old tech versus new tech, and, you know, with blockchain and cryptocurrency. And I mean, that's immediate settlement. You know, there should be a way to be able to do this. And, you know, so again, we're talking T+2, which is transaction date plus two. It's just stupid. Now, I heard today, oh, you know, maybe we'll, I think the ideal should be we should go to immediate settlement, whatever that means. But now they're talking, well, we can probably improve it and get everybody to sign on to T plus one, right? But
better than it's better than the current option. But still, I think that's a bit of a cop out on the part of the brokerages.
Yeah, well, I almost wonder whether or not they're trying to create some addition. They don't want to remove all of the friction, you know, because they're worried about, okay, if we increase the, if that further increases the velocity of trading. So, I mean, if you assume that $0 commissions and access to margin, easy access to margin, reduced friction, which increased the velocity of trading. And if we believe that increased velocity of trading increases the risk of blow up, then maybe there's some hesitation to removing what's a kind of a natural speed bump, right? Because, okay, I can't just keep whipping until I get to a certain size. I think it's 25 grand in your account allows you to have kind of that day trade, be able to do that. But, you know, maybe that's, but I think honestly, it's probably just that everything is so arcane that trying to get everybody's so entrenched. And probably everybody's making money off of it. I mean, there's probably a bunch of money being made off of T plus two.
Oh yeah.
So you've got to be able to tell the people who aren't, you got to basically tell those people, guess what? You're not going to be able to make your money anymore. You know, halfway through that thing, there was a point where Griffith was talking. I was like, I tweeted this meme or whatever you call it, GIF or whatever, of people looking through closets and looking through bros. I'm like, yeah, these are all the Griffiths people trying to figure out how to replace the lost money they can generate.
Yeah.
Get rid of the paying for order flow. But I mean, yeah. So I think greater clarity into how you, the trader or investor as the product, could be a potential benefit coming out of this, maybe the elimination of T plus two, and then maybe, Joe, a greater awareness of just, you know, regulations that are already on the books governing things like pump and dump. You know, I mean, you cannot go out and buy a stock and then exaggerate where you think it's going to be a year from now under the whole premise of I'm going to get my followers to buy my stock. You can't do that. You know, it's one thing to disclose, like Roaring Kitty did, a manifesto explaining your position and why you bought something. I don't think that is a problem. But it would be a problem if you said, if you went into the trade saying, I'm going to buy this for the sole purpose of going out and touting it on my social media so that other people will buy it. So there's
of course.
Argument. It's just the argument is I'm going to manipulate other people to buy my stock so that I can sell into it. And I guarantee you, Joe, I mean, now I'll get cynical, but I bet how many people are in Reddit now in that Wall Street Bets? Do you know?
It's close to 10 million, I believe, which is insane because it was like a million or two when all this started. Yeah, 9.1 million.
I'm going to say that some minority percentage of that number of people were in it just to try and get other people to buy their shares, either because they were selling it as it was rising or they wanted other people to help prop it up.
I think so you think there are Reddit users who are culpable? Is that accurate?
Hey, listen, I don't know. I'm just saying that with that many people on there, you gonna tell me that there's not somebody trying to game that system?
Oh, of course. Out of 10 million people, I mean, that would be like taking New York City plus a little bit more and saying, are there greasy scumbags in the city of New York? Of course there are.
Yeah, I think you're right. Everybody needs to go out. If you haven't watched it yet, you gotta go watch either The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yep.
Or Boiler Room. Those two movies, I think in the post GameStop, you know, if you want, you got to watch those because again, that's pumping. I mean, that's what the Boiler Rooms did. They would take on some stock, usually some crap company. I'm not saying GameStop's a crap company. I actually think that they have a way to survive and maybe even thrive if they can make this pivot. But
I think they're a crap company.
You think they're great. We had this debate last week, so we won't rehash it too much. But usually they would take like a penny stock, some over-the-counter, pink sheet, nonsensical stock.
Yeah.
People, please do not buy these stocks. And they would call, get on the phone, and they'd call, trying to find marks, suckers, to buy the shares from the company. So they basically were talking their own books, selling their own inventory, and you can't do that. That's illegal, people. You'll go to jail, you'll get fined, whatever else. Yeah. So I think that's one of the other upsides maybe that comes out of this whole mess.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's going to make for a great kind of history lesson on, you know, this is what happens when 9 million people rally behind the future of one single company. So it's, at the very least, it's been really fun to watch, and I'm looking forward to seeing if there's any like further democratization or transparency that comes out of this. I think that brokerages like Robinhood owe us a lot at this point. They owe us a lot of information. So with that, why don't we pivot a little bit? Speaking of Robinhood, I'll start this off by just bringing up, believe it or not, viewers and listeners, I'm about to pull up a meme from Reddit. This may be the last time I do this. I might regret this, but I want to talk about. As we had kind of hinted at earlier, this concept of loss porn, as they call it on Wall Street Bets. So what we're referring to here is a chart that looks a lot like this. You see, if you're on Wall Street Bets, this is so freaking familiar to you. You only see screenshots of either the chart going down like this or the exact mirror image of this. That's the only screenshots that people ever post. So the title here says it all. Can anyone guess when I discovered options trading? And so I want to just use this as a bit of an intro to a discussion about how portfolios tank. So yeah, Todd, take it away.
Yeah, what causes implosions like this? You can stop sharing that screen. Yeah. That's horrible to look at. I don't even see that loss.
It hurts.
It hurts.
But
it hurts.
Options trading can definitely cause that, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I've been thinking a lot. As you know, Joe, because you took the class with me. I teach a class how to talk stocks at the University of New Hampshire. And, you know, we've got a lot of students in there now who are, you know, eager future stock gurus. You know, they're loving it and they're trading and everything. I started thinking a lot about what we've seen the last couple of weeks and thinking about the other side of that. I mean, yes, you have people who made money, but you got a lot of people who lost money too.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, one of the things I want to try and do is kind of, you know, help people understand the risks that they run and the things to look out for. So I started thinking back over the course of my 30 years or so investing now and think about the things that I've seen that have caused people to implode. So how do you define implode? I mean, like you made money and then you wiped out, right? So, you know, it's like a yard sale on the ski slopes, right? You're going down, you're doing great. And then all of a sudden you're in the woods and all your stuff's off of you and everything else.
Yep.
So what causes those implosions? And there's more, I'm simplifying it, but there were three big buckets, Joe, that I think that you can stuff most of the reasons that people implode into. And they are lifestyle, leverage, and mindset. So I think that, you know, lifestyle, leverage, and mindset, those are the three places where we tend to make the most mistakes and run afoul and end up, you know, wiping ourselves out when it comes to investing. I mean, lifestyle and personal finance, I mean, that's probably a pretty easy one, right, Joe? I mean,
yeah,
what would you say is the number one personal finance, you know, rule to live by?
Live within your means.
Exactly. So, I mean, but what you see sometimes is you'll see some people have quick wins in the market or whatever. They extrapolate out those wins. Like, you know, next thing you know, you're doing compound interest calculators and you're saying, wow, I'm going to be a gazillionaire within 10 years, you know, or whatever. So then they end up, you know, spending above whatever their income is. And as a result, that forces them to start drawing down and treating their trading account, their investing account, as their primary source of income.
Yeah.
And that is fine when the market's going good. Maybe I'm not going to say fine. It's not, you shouldn't do it.
I'd say it's pretty dangerous.
It's pretty dangerous. But the reality is that markets don't always go up. And when they start going down, you now have less and less money because you're living off of that money as well as trying to invest with that money. So lifestyle decisions. And I think that the number one thing you can do to avoid making that mistake is to always be living within your means. Just like you said it beautifully, Joe, you know, and I hate budgets. I hate them.
Yeah, I think we all do.
Yeah. But I mean, if you know what your income is, don't spend more than your income. I mean, I've seen that happen too many times, right? You go out and you buy the fancy Porsche because you think you're going to end up continuing making money forever. And then, or you don't ring the register and make that money real, whatever. And it disappears. So that'd be lifestyle. And then the second bucket that I put a lot of the mistakes into, Joe, would be leverage. And you and I talk a lot about ever since we started recording, is the risks associated with leverage, right, Joe? I mean, we've got margin and options, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that chart that I just pulled up, for those of you who couldn't see it, just picture a cliff. That's essentially what I pulled up, except that the cliff was a red line. And it happens because people on Reddit or, you know, people who are just day trading for fun, they get a bunch of money in their portfolio and they get really smug and they feel invincible because, you know, they're 22 years old and they've got $200,000 in their portfolio and they're like, yeah, YOLO, I'm going to trade some options. And we've advocated against options so many times on this show. And furthermore, you advocated against options so many times in the How to Talk Stocks class, that, you know, we probably sound like broken records at this point.
But, yeah. And, you know, I mean, sure. If you're a highly sophisticated investor and you've been at it a long time, and maybe you're writing options or you're doing very sophisticated options strategy that can control your risk. But if you're just going out and you're buying a short-term expiration option thinking, hey, I'm going to hit a home run, you will wipe out. Yeah. You'll wipe out. You may look like a superstar. And, you know, the opposite, like you said, the mirror image of the chart you shared, in a way that contributes to a lot of other people saying, now I'll take on that risk because look how good he's doing.
Yep.
And it's that fear of missing out. So you're seeing that and you're saying to yourself, oh, I got to get on board this or whatever. But again, the use of that leverage works. It works until it doesn't. And I think that one of the things that people need to remember, and I think the Robinhood is a really good example of this, the rules can change. The rules can change. Listen, if Robinhood hadn't changed the rules, they faced a liquidation crisis.
Oh yeah.
You could have woken up and it wasn't just that you couldn't trade those three stocks and then eventually 17 stocks or whatever. You would have woken up and not been able to trade anything.
There would have been a run on Robinhood.
Your accounts would have been locked.
Yeah. In the same way that there were runs on banks during the Great Depression.
Yeah.
It would have been the exact same thing.
Right. And you guess what? You don't have FDIC insurance like you have in a bank. You have something called SIPC, S-I-P-C. They only guarantee you the number of shares. They don't guarantee you a price or a value. So you own 100 shares of GameStop. Guess what? You wouldn't even have been able to sell them. You couldn't even have been able to sell them. You just would have at some tight date in the future, SIPC would have made you whole with giving you your 100 shares or whatever it was they happened to own. So, I mean, this was a good reminder that, you know, the rules can change. And one of the things, the rules that can change is margin requirements. You know, you can go in and they can say originally to you, okay, we're going to allow you to margin and you don't need to have 50% equity. They can change that and say, no, you need to have 80% equity now. And you're like, well, you've lent it to me at 50%. What do you mean it's 80% now? Right? Or whatever. And then you would have to either come up with the cash out of your own wallet, or they would say, we're liquidating it for you. And you'd wake up the next morning and get, and I've been there, Joe. I've been there. I've had forced liquidations because I've looked at it and said, I'm not going to give any more money chasing this bad stock. I'm just going to YOLO it. And if it goes up tomorrow morning, I'm bailed out of my margin. And 9 times out of 10 times, no, you won't. You'll get forced liquidated out of the name and you lost it.
Don't use margin, listeners. That's the lesson. We've said it so many times before.
Right. I mean, I think that there are times if you're, but for most people, listen, it goes into my third thing, mindset. So again, the three reasons that people wipe out oftentimes are lifestyle, leverage, and mindset. You know, if you invest with a cash account and you don't use leverage, you can be better about sticking to your rules. You can be more systematic and you can be less emotion driven, because the last thing you want when the market is collapsing is to be worrying about a shifting margin requirement and a margin call. You want to have your list up of top stocks to be buying on sale and buying those names. You can do that if you're in the right mindset. If you're chasing your tail and worried about wiping out, I guarantee you, you'll just compound problems. You will make more mistakes. So you've got to have, I guess the final thing would be, have the right mindset, be rules-based, be system-driven, be unemotional. And as Joe, you and I have said on the show before, you plan your trades and you trade your plans.
Yeah. I hate to say it, but this kind of reminds me of what I've been told to do in a casino. Where you walk in with, so if you go to, whether it's Foxwoods in Connecticut or you go to, you know, Caesar's Palace in Vegas or something, the same rule applies. You walk in with a certain amount of cash in your hand that you're comfortable losing. Once you lose that cash, you leave. You don't go back to the ATM and get more cash to keep gambling. So it's a sign. Like, if you bring in $300 and you lose it in 20 minutes, get the hell out. don't take another $300 out of the ATM and then sit back down at the blackjack table.
Yeah. And that happened to me one time. I was down in DC and I went to, I can't remember which casino it was, but I went in and I brought a certain amount of money, and I don't know, my luck was just not with me that day. And I was playing blackjack. I should have been able to stretch it out way longer than I did. But I was like out of the game in like a half hour. All my friends are running around still having fun. And I'm like, well, I'll just watch them play. And that's the mindset thing, right?
Yeah.
You gotta be able to watch them play and be okay with it and be like, yeah, okay, you make your money.
That takes some principle and some vigilance. So yeah, good for you.
You know, the other good advice I had gotten at one point in my life when it came to gambling from a former employee of mine, great guy. We went down together to a place in Connecticut, and you know, he's like, you know what I do is I have the money that I'm willing to gamble in one pocket, and I put my winnings in the other pocket.
I've heard that too. Yeah.
One pocket is gone. I'm done. So you could still have winning, you know, you could still come out ahead because you use two different pockets, right? And I was like, yeah, oh, that's a
very good strategy as well, that you can, I probably wouldn't translate that to investing, because then you're just saying, once you make gains on everything and sell, never reinvest. That's probably not the best way to do it. But yeah,
right. If we have people who like to go to casinos as entertainment, maybe that's something they can
do. Absolutely. So do you want to shift into may be a mega smattering?
Yeah.
All right. This might be a new curated term for us. Mega smattering. We have regular smattering.
I've got a lot, because we got beat up the last couple of days. The market came down. A lot of stocks are coming down. We had this great show the other week where we talked about some of the things I look for when I like to buy. When stocks in our research, free trial, link below. when stocks in our research are screening high, but maybe they've run up and they're challenging new highs or they're breaking out, I'll add them to a watch list. And then I'll try to buy them, excuse me, if they fall 5% or more, or they get down to the 21-day or the 50-day or the 200-day. So go back, it was maybe a couple episodes or so ago where we talked about that. So a bunch of stocks have kind of made the grade in that respect. So let me share my screen. And for people who are listening, we post these on Twitter. Let me see here. And do this. And Joe, can you see the large cap report?
Yes, I can.
All right, great. So we put out the large, mid, and small cap reports every week. And it's basically ranking the sector, top sectors, and the top stocks in the baskets. You'll see in large cap technology, financials, industrials, energy, and REITs are where you should be focusing. You should be avoiding utilities and basics right now. In mid cap, consumer services, tech, industrials, you can see some common themes here. In small cap, REITs, consumer, and technology. So again, those are the ponds that you want to be fishing in. So based upon that, I started looking through at some stocks of interest. Take some water. And one of them is Pioneer Natural, PXD. So Joe, tell us a little bit about what you've read on Texas and this whole winter storm.
Oh my gosh. Insanity. So if you haven't been keeping up, if I don't know, maybe you're in Texas and you like haven't had power for 5 days, you might not know what's going on. Otherwise, unless you literally live under a rock, you've heard about the insane cold snap that's been really plaguing Texas the past week or so. One of the things that I learned over the course of the week is that Texas has like their own separate power grid from the rest of the United States. And as a result of the cold and lots of natural gas plants having to shut down, the state of Texas has essentially ground to a halt. And that consequently means a lot for energy companies.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we've had some tailwinds so far this year in the oil prices. And I think that, you know, we have a potential here for oil prices to stay relatively high, especially as economy expands. We've got, like you said, we've got all of these problems in Texas right now with the grid and with production theoretically and getting oil to markets and stuff. So we're going to keep an eye on how oil prices behave from here. We've been pretty good about this energy basket. We've made some good money on it since it started popping up our work in December. Two more that I would add to the list. Again, Pioneer Natural Resources, I think right here is viable as we get a slight little pullback here towards the 21 and 50 day. The other one I wanted to mention was Continental Resources, which is right about back to its pivot point, right above its 21-day moving average. Both of these are expected to see their earnings bounce back next year and certainly would be big beneficiaries of rebounding demand for shale and higher prices. The other thing I wanted to point out based on the Texas news was that, I mean, think about, Joe, what's going to happen to the infrastructure, the electric infrastructure in Texas? Do you think they're going to spend more on that infrastructure or less?
I think they're going to have to spend more, judging by the amount of pictures I've seen of metal pipe fixtures, like huge metal pipe fixtures that probably weigh like 50 pounds a piece that are just split apart. Like they're, God, I don't even know what to compare it to, but just insane because all of the pipes have frozen because there's no electricity to keep stuff warm.
Right. So I think people really need to start looking at some of these service providers and these companies that are going to likely to benefit from the infrastructure spending to repair and replace some of this stuff. And I think, you know, we've already heard from Texas Governor Abbott saying that winterization is something that he wants to mandate. A company like Quanta Services could benefit. That's a high scoring stock in our group. PWR is the symbol. And they're located in, their headquarters are in Texas. And they're one of the largest when it comes to, you know, doing energy installation and repair work for electric grids, power, gas, pipelines, you name it. So Quanta Services is one that I would look at. Another one in that similar space. Of the two, I like the setup on power better, PWR. MYR Group is this other one. Similar there is Mary Yogi Reagan George. I don't know, MYRG. That's underneath the 200, the 50-day and the 21-day, and the 21-day is rolling down. So for me, I would want to see the relative strength line start to explode higher, and I'd want to see a recapture of that. If it does, then I think that one could also be a stock to make a play in that kind of infrastructure rebuild play. So those were the two, those were a few that I wanted to highlight from, they were Texas specific. Outside of that, a few stocks I'm watching, Nautilus, NLS, which is a personal fitness.
I think we've company. Talked about them on the show before.
Yeah. Looks like it's going to make a challenge here for all time. Well, is it all time? We'll go to the weekly chart. Yeah. It could very well be all time highs.
Yeah.
The monthly chart. You'd have to go back to 2001. Close. Yeah. So 20 years ago. So yeah, there's no overhead resistance there. So if this busts out and then pulls back, I'd be interested. They're reporting on the 22nd. I don't advise buying ahead of earnings reports. I think that's too much of a gamble. But stocks do tend to trend up following earnings. So if this was to, say, sell off post-earnings and get down to its 21 or its 50, maybe I would take a swing at that. So that's when I'm watching. Constellation Brands, which is a major wine, beer, Corona, and spirits maker. They also own part of Canopy Growth, which is a big marijuana play in Canada, that had run up to big highs, right? And now has retreated back to the 21 day. That's not a bad entry point to get into that. Another one in smaller cap company, well, mid cap company, Fox Factory Holdings, high performance suspension products for mountain bikes and off-road and all terrain vehicles, right?
One of the seasonality things about, right there.
Yeah. We talked a lot about Polaris a couple of weeks ago and some of these off-road vehicles and stuff and demand, and people have more money this year than they did last year, and they're cooped up and they want to be outside. So, you know, that really was a big tailwind for Fox last year. And I think they could very well be a tailwind this year. I love that 23% year-over-year revenue growth in the third quarter. Again, they report on the 25th. So I would wait to see how that goes. Earnings in 21 expected to grow 19% year-over-year from 2020. And you see that nice little volume spike?
Oh, yeah.
On the up day, you know, I love seeing that as well. So that's a stock that I'm watching. You know, we always talk about technology stocks as being stocks that, you know, hey, great, let's got these, make some money. But financials have been a good place. I mean, just to show people JP Morgan and Bank of America, look at those charts, Joe.
Yeah, we've been talking about financials off and on the show. Gosh, I don't even know for how long, several months now, I think. We had talked about regional banks for a while that were scoring really high. I don't know if those are still high scoring. But yeah, like I know Prudential has been close to the top of the list for
months. Yeah, I mean, I got the JP Morgan chart up and you can see how much that's run. I've got the Bank of America chart up now.
Yeah.
We've gone from 23 last October to 35. I mean, that's crazy, especially when you think of the fact that, like, you know, and I happen to like this stock and I'm long at Amazon, but look at where Amazon's gone the last 6 months.
Flat.
I mean, would you have rather have owned Bank of America than Amazon? Yeah. You know, so, I mean, don't pigeonhole yourself into one basket. That's why our sector rankings that we put out every week are so useful, because it shows you where these opportunities, where these ponds are that you can fish in and make more money, you know, so you avoid having this dead money that's just sitting there. So some stocks that I wanted to point out were, and this is especially because of what we're seeing with Robinhood and stuff, Market Access, MKTX, electronic trading of US and European bonds to broker dealers, institutional clients. Yes, we are moving more to electric and getting people out of the way. They slow things down, right?
That's
so
right.
More and more, it's getting digital. MKTX has pulled back to its 21 and its 50. It's recovering both. You know, it's in a nice channel here. This is a stock I would take right now. The earnings are out of the way. They don't have earnings report until April 29th. So this is a stock I would buy right now. I haven't bought it yet. This one I have bought, Virtu Financial, quotations for buy and sell securities, you know, bid offer, information, insight, right? So kind of, you know, going back to what we were talking about earlier in the show. And you know, you've got a company here, 69% acquisitions are involved there too, a little bit, 69% year over year, 72%, 142%. And you know, you're right up against this 2976 area, right above the 21 day. I bought that. I own that. I think that's one that you could look at. And we just added this one to coverage in the research model this week. I don't know how to pronounce it. Athena Holding, reinsure retirement savings products. So, you know, maybe it's HSAs. I've got to do a little bit more due diligence on it, but it's very high scoring in our research, and we just added it to the research. And you know, you can see from a technical perspective, above the 21, above the 50 with a nice little W. And if it can clear this 47, pretty good shape, and you don't have earnings until May 8th to worry about. So those were a few in the finance sector to mention. I did also want to highlight a couple defense stocks that are popping up on my radar. One is Huntington Ingalls, and 14% year-over-year growth in the December quarter, 20% expected EPS growth this year and next year. Recovered its 200 above its 50 and its 21-day, and bumping right up against this 180 resistance. So if it can clear that pivot level, this thing I think has some running room. I don't own that one yet, but it's what I'm considering. This one I do own. I just bought it this week. It's small cap play, so buyer beware. Rada Electronic Industries. This is they make radars that can be deployed pretty readily for protecting soldiers and vehicles that are being deployed. So they a defense, again, a defense contractor. They're based in Israel. You can see that their revenue was up 62% year over year in the fourth quarter to $23 million. They're already profitable, 39 cents expected in 21, 58 cents expected in 22. And you know, you're moving up now on increasing volume on these buy days. It's a very illiquid stock, so it can get swayed. There's only 36 million shares that float, but I wanted to bring that up because that's high scoring in the research as well. Oh, going back to the trade for Texas, probably not, we talked about this actually when we were talking about seasonal plays, Joe, prior.
Oh, yeah.
But Generac Holdings, generator company.
Whoa.
Yeah. Remember that's when we said, hey, you might want to consider this because winter storms tend to get this thing going? Well, yep.
Is that jump from earlier this week?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, you've gone from basically 290 to 360 on the Texas winter storm news. Huh. Caterpillar generators also for yep. industrial use. You know, that could be supporting Caterpillar's recent run as well as their earnings report. So those were two more that I wanted to just highlight as far as reinforcing when we talk about seasonality, what seasonality can mean for some of these stocks. And I think that's probably, you know, we've gone on a while, but I think that's probably a good place to stop. Well, you know, I'll do one more throwback. You know, I love talking stocks, right?
Oh,
I'll do
yeah.
one more throwback. You know, we mentioned NVIDIA the other day, and I talked about, you know, if you get that breakout and then you get a little pullback, and that's exactly what we've seen. We got the breakout, and now we're getting a little pullback. I think that this has some running room. So I think NVIDIA, I would keep on that list. I'd say that that's something that's buyable, although you got earnings looks like next week. So again, be careful there. And then just another company, because this is really good kind of reinforcer of what I was talking about the other day and when I like to buy. This is relatively new to the coverage as well in the research. And I sure enough went out and bought this yesterday in my own account. So I am talking about my own book a little bit there. ACM Research. They do cleaning equipment that's used in semiconductor equipment facilities. So you've got your semiconductor equipment. Everything has to be completely taken care of to make sure that it's in top-notch condition. This company produces some of the equipment that's used for that. You can see that in the quarter ending in September, up 43% year over year to 48 million. Shares have retreated. We're down pretty big, double digits going into yesterday. I use that as my opportunity to buy. We're up a little bit today, about 7%. We'll see where it goes from here, but I wanted to mention that as a potential because it shows, you know, again, how I like to buy those down 5% days in stocks that are on my research. So I guess there we'll stick a pin in it, Joe.
All right. Yeah. Well, listeners, viewers, I hope you enjoyed that mega smattering. We might have to get a trademark on that term. We'll see. Yeah. So that was a pretty long episode. So I think we're going to leave it there so I can get this thing uploaded to YouTube, you know, within the next week. So yeah, we'll see you all next week. Have a good weekend, everyone.